creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
Today's Culture Click is the second part of our conversation with Sheik Oda Mahawish. Last week, we heard Mr. Mahawish's lecture at WSU titled Everything You Wanted to Know About Jihad But Were Afraid to Ask. Mr. Mahawish discussed the origins of the word jihad, its true meaning, and what it has come to mean today. In our conclusion, I sit down with Mr. Mahawish for a one-on-one interview to further discuss the meaning of jihad and how we can promote understanding between people of different faiths. I'm Bill Stoneberg with Sheik Oda Mahawish on today's Culture Click. Hi, I'm Bill Stoneberg, and I'm here with Oda Mahawish. So, welcome tonight.
Thank you for having me.
And I'd just like to start out, what is the topic of the lecture? Like, what is the main message, I guess?
The main message is that we have a number of concepts around the world, that are floating around the world, that are greatly misunderstood and feared. Right. One of those concepts is obviously jihad. So we will attempt tonight to explain what jihad is linguistically and from an Islamic theological and legal perspective, and hopefully share some ideas with the audience.
What does jihad mean? You know, I mean, and I know that a lot of people connect it with Islam. I don't know personally if it is or not. Well, what does it mean, and what are the implications of it?
You know, perhaps the best way to explain jihad is by giving an example.
Okay.
As you probably can notice, that my voice is a little hoarse. I just came back from the from a trip to the Middle East.
Okay.
So I went to a doctor there who was happened to be a Christian doctor.
Okay.
And I complained to him about the amount of smoking that people do there.
Oh.
So the doctor himself told me, he said, you know, yes, I understand. In this country, we need to wage jihad against smoking. And so it struck me right there and then that this is the real definition of jihad. Jihad comes from an Arabic word which means to exert yourself.
Okay.
So when you go to the gym to be fit, that's jihad. When you go to school and try to get good grades so you can have a good future, that is jihad. When you care about your health or care about your community, when you clean the streets or go to church or go to the synagogue or the mosque, that's all jihad. Actually, when you cut the grass so it looks nice, so the whole neighborhood looks nice, that is jihad. So jihad is the struggle to better yourself and everything around you.
Okay. Would that be similar to, like, seems like in this country we wage war on everything, like even, you know, pollution or whatever, you know, war on drugs. Is it kind of like that? Like it just gets used in many different ways?
Absolutely. The campaigns that we have, you know, the campaign against the drugs, that is definitely one of the best examples of jihad.
Okay.
And absolutely, you're absolutely right. You know, hopefully a campaign to reduce taxes, that would be jihad. you know, we don't win all battles, right? But we try.
Right.
So, yes, absolutely, that is what jihad is. So we all are involved in one form of jihad or another.
Okay, so it's mostly kind of a language thing and maybe a misinterpretation or misunderstanding that happens a lot? Or?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a misinterpretation. It is actually a false interpretation of something.
Okay.
There's a fine line there. It's a false interpretation, and that false interpretation of what jihad is came about because of historical events and political and media manipulation.
What would you say is the number one misconception that that a lot of people have, especially in this country, about the word jihad?
Yeah, the number one misconception around the world, not just in this country, about jihad is that it's holy war.
Right.
There is no such concept as holy war in Islam. Okay. War cannot be holy in Islam. There is such thing as self-defense, and that act itself is an act of exerting yourself to defend your community, to defend the oppressed, the weak.
Right.
That by itself is, yes, absolutely holy. But the act of war, even if it's in self-defense, even when somebody attacks you, if you step into war before taking all the other steps by trying to resolve the conflict in peace, then you have stepped into something that is unholy. Because at the end of the day, war causes damage, whether damage to persons or damage to property, and both of those are sins in Islam. So by this analysis, you can see that in Islam, there isn't such a thing as holy war. Well, that's what people come to think of as this is a holy war against by Muslims against non-Muslims.
Right. Okay. Great. Since there is a lot of misconception about that, what would you say to someone who thinks that jihad means a holy war and that Muslims want to wage jihad on non-Muslims or something of that nature?
Well, I would say that if this was the case, there are 1.6 billion Muslims around the world, and there are 10 million American Muslims, some say 8, so between 8 and 10. If this was true and that Muslims want to wage war on non-Muslims, the world would be in bad shape today. There are very few Muslims, a very small percentage. By the best accounts, there are about less than 2% of Muslims who believe in an ideology of waging war against Muslims who disagree with them in the interpretation of Islam and non-Muslims alike. Mm-hmm. And those, of course, are constituted a problem that we all face as a humanity. Extremists, and those extremists, frankly speaking, exist not only in Muslim communities, they exist in Christian communities, they exist in atheist communities, they exist in all other communities where people take it upon themselves to try to force others to follow their path, otherwise they would take up arms against them. A good example of that is that the person who killed the doctor who was performing abortion. I myself disagree with abortions, but I wouldn't carry arms against somebody who performs abortions because we have a law that deals with these issues. So that person was a Christian man who killed a doctor who was definitely not a Muslim. I don't know what his faith was. So this was a form of extremism that exists in every society. I would say to people who believe that jihad is holy war by Muslims against non-Muslims is to be realistic for one thing, and the second thing is to educate themselves. Just think about this. If 1.6 billion Muslims really truly believed in this false interpretation, the world would be at war in every aspect of it much, much more severely than it is right now. While right now we have trade, 80% of the world trade goes through the Middle East, and the Middle East is a Muslim, mm-hmm. predominantly Muslim. That no trade would go through, that there would be a lot more wars around the world than we have right now.
What would you say is the main difference between Christian and Muslim religions, and are they really that different?
There are some differences. What they have in common is the belief in one God, the Creator, the just, merciful God. The name doesn't really matter. Call him Jehovah, Yahweh, God the Almighty. In Christianity, they may call him the Father. In Arabic, Muslims, Christians, and Jews call him Allah. So this is not an Arabic, this is not an exclusively Muslim name. If you go to churches in the Middle East, and there are many, many of them, you walk into any church and you'll find the name Allah written all over the place. Okay. So there is a belief in the one God. There is a belief in Jesus as the Messiah. That's something that's common between Muslims and Christians. It surprises me how many Christians do not know that Muslims believe that Jesus, the son of Mary, was born of the Virgin Mary, that he was the Messiah, that he's up in heaven, and that he's coming back to establish the kingdom of God. We have this in common. We have in common the Ten Commandments. Verbatim. We have in common loving your neighbor. We have in common doing all the good for the world. The differences we have are, you can say that they're minor. They're ideological differences. Was Jesus God? We believe that he's the Spirit of God, but he wasn't God. We don't believe that he is crucified. We believe that God protected him from crucifixion because he's the Messiah and he needs to finish his job. So God protected him to come up to heaven, and he is seated next to the throne of God, awaiting the command from God to come back and establish the kingdom of God. So when you look at these differences, you find that they are noble differences, actually, what I call. Thinking that Jesus was too beloved for God to allow people to kill him, to crucify him, I know goes against Trinitarian Christianity beliefs. But by itself, when you think about it, it's a noble thought, because this is a sign of extreme, utter love for Jesus, because he's the Messiah.
It sounds like there's probably a lot more similarities than there really are differences, huh?
I would say that the similarities are well over 90%.
Okay, cool. Is Islam still the largest religion in the world? I think I heard that.
I believe it is, and I believe it's the fastest growing religion in the world. I think, according to the United Nations, in 2025, it will be the predominant religion in the world. In Europe, both Italy and Russia will be predominantly Muslim countries in 2050, according to most statistics. And this information should not alarm people. If they know what Islam is, if they truly know what Islam is, they should not be alarmed by this. I know a lot of people who say, well, we know what Islam is through September 11, or we know what Islam is through the Taliban. This is unfair to Islam and Muslims. This is like saying, if Muslims say, we know what Christianity is through Hiroshima or through Hitler. Those were not Christian acts. These are people who try to justify evil acts by the name of a faith so that they can recruit more people. I can assure them that Muslims, and I travel the world of Islam, the world of Muslims, I speak to Muslims from every country in the world, that Muslims are not like the terrorists who attacked us on September 11.
Okay. And in that, do you think that media outlets have helped to make people a little more tolerant of religion, or do you think that they have kind of hindered that process and the things that they say?
You know, we have quite a diverse media in the United States, and you have media that is tends to lean to the right, and media that tends to lean to the left. Media play to the sentiments of the people, so media pick up stories that sell in the street. That by itself is counterproductive. Because media should pick up stories that educate people on really what is going on in the world without trying to steer people's thinking in one way or another. For instance, I do this with my students actually in class. I show them a story, any story that happened, and I will give you an example of a story where there was a camp in Southern California, and a man walked in, attacked some of the children there, injured two children. It wasn't a big story, but it was in the media. And the media didn't cover it that much. This was a man who attacked children, and the police arrested him. The story was over. So I asked my students to rewrite the story as if the man was a Muslim, and the story would receive a lot more coverage. My students did agree in every case that the story would have received a lot more coverage. This is similar to the experiences of many minorities around the world. They go through a period of time where there is a lot of focus on that minority. Even in our country here, not many years ago, actually, very few years ago, if there was a black man who committed a crime, they would say a black man committed a crime. Right. And if it was a white man who committed a crime, they would say a man committed the crime. This is not exclusive to America. This is a human phenomenon around the world where people would focus on minorities and they tend to subconsciously highlight anything that the society commonly fears. So Muslims are going through that right now. The Irish went through it here. The Polish went through it. The Germans went through it. The Japanese went through it. So we have a lot of this that the media do, but the media eventually will leave Muslims alone and focus perhaps in a different group.
Right. Unfortunately, they'll probably always focus on some group. Do you think the people have been becoming more tolerant of religion or religious views, or do you think it's kind of stayed the same? Or,
you know, I think over the last 10 years or so, since September 11, many more Americans have become a little bit more educated about Islam, specifically if I speak about Islam. They have been forced to read or study or Google what the word Islam is, and they are not taking what some major networks are telling them about what Islam is. So, you know, the American people are good people. They want to learn. They want to really know the truth. Most people did not become experts in Islam, they have come to know that, the Muslim community is a diverse community. Out of 1.6 billion, there are all kinds of Muslims, very parallel to Christianity. We certainly have our Catholics in Islam. We have our Protestant Islam. We have our evangelicals. We have our Baptists in Islam, but they have different names and slightly different shapes, if you would. So I think the American people are becoming more aware of this. We're lagging the rest of the world, but we will catch up. We'll catch up.
Nice. Can you tell me a little bit about the Muslim-Christian Dialogue Center and kind of your role in it?
We focus on really not changes anyone's mind, but educating people about the faiths of Islam and Christianity, so that people have a better understanding of what these faiths teach. Because we have a conviction. We're convinced that, as we mentioned earlier, that what we have in common far outweighs what we have, the differences that we have. What we have in common, definitely the moral code is the same code. Mm-hmm. Definitely the belief in one God is absolutely the same. Right. The same belief. Definitely the belief in Jesus being the Messiah is the same belief. So if we have all this in common, we believe that if people discover who they are, if they interact with the other side, that people will become we'll get to love each other, because one of the teachings, the fundamental teachings of Islam, is that people, humanity is good, it's not evil. Mm-hmm. And if humanity is good, all we have to do is irrigate that seed of goodness in humanity so that it affects people positively.
Nice. Well put. I like that. You're teaching at St. Thomas University, right?
University of St. Thomas.
Okay, University of St. Thomas.
I teach two subjects. One is theology. It's actually the title of the course is Islam and Christianity.
Okay.
And I teach another course that's the history of the modern Middle East.
Okay.
Which is a very popular course. I mean, both courses are very popular, but the second one is especially popular because of the Arab Spring, or so-called Arab Spring.
Okay, cool. I'm kind of curious, what would you say is the most rewarding thing about teaching those courses right now?
Well, you know, teaching the theology course, what is most rewarding for me is to see my students discover how much in common people of the world have. Because I do cover, on purpose, other faiths and show how much in common they have with the faiths of Islam and Christianity. The second thing is that I find that many, many of my students tell me that they now understand Christianity and feel that their faith that has been strengthened by because of my education as a Muslim professor. I find that to be really rewarding. Many of my students say that this was, a great course for them because it answered questions that nobody else ventured into,
right,
if you would. History of the modern Middle East, I try to teach my students the elements behind why does history happen, or why did history happen the way it happened?
Right.
What were the causes? Why did people make the decisions that they did, so that we have the historical outcome that we had, and also examine many historical givings, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
Did they really happen? We discuss, as one of many examples, something that's called false flag operations and how they affect the world. And, for your audience, your listeners, false flag operations is where a country or an entity performs an operation, or sometimes even a terrorist attack or attacks another nation under the flag of a third nation so that they can instigate war between them. When my students discover how many of the historical events that happened in the Middle East that were the cause, were caused by false flag operations, they're astonished. And then they understand why there is a lot of confusion and bewilderment and anger in the Middle East about what's going on in the world.
Okay. How would you say we can maybe promote tolerance or promote understanding, I guess, on a more global level like that, understanding that there are reasons that things happen in history and the way they happened?
I wish I can have every one of my students and every student and everybody travel the world.
Okay.
That is absolutely the best way of getting to know other people.
Okay.
I traveled four continents, and I can tell you all of my education, all of my experiences do not come anywhere near the experience of traveling and touching people, speaking with people, sharing a meal with them, listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing equals that. Some of my students actually do travel to the Middle East, and I just came back from the Middle East, and I met some of them there, and they were having a great time. I was very happy about some of the programs that we have here in our different universities, because I saw that my students had a lot of confidence in dealing with people of the Middle East, showing understanding of their cultures and of their understanding of the world. Of course, not everyone can travel. Then we take it to the next level, which is virtual travel. Virtual travel is through media.
Right.
If we have media programs, if you would, that would show, would reflect the actual lives of other people,
mm-hmm,
without trying to put a slant on it, people would really fall in love with each other. I find this to be so true. I know it is somewhat, poetic, but if people around the world know each other, they would actually fall in love with each other. And that has been my experience. Again, I haven't gone to, Europe, Africa, Asia, traveled the U.S., all the states. It doesn't really matter where you go. Once you speak with people, have a meal with them, and listen to them, you find that they are good at heart. And that's how people get to know each other. Our education, we should not teach others to be tolerant of each other, because the word tolerance implies superiority by one party to another.
Right.
There's no human being who's superior to another human being.
Right.
We're all equal. We're all created by a father and a mother. We're all created to love other people and care for other people and love our children and care for them. We're all created to work hard and wish for the best for our children, our families, and our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
These are common things. These are not exclusive to Islam or Christianity or Judaism or Buddhism or any faith. In fact, you find many atheists who have these values. So let's just go back to the basics of humanity. If we do go back to the basics of humanity, then we can understand each other. What we should try to instill in each other is really a true sense of understanding and empathy towards each other for whatever faith you have, whatever political ideology you have, whatever social ideology you have. I may disagree with you, but that disagreement does not mean or does not necessarily need to hatred to discourse. Right. It means respect, because it would enrich me to make me understand who you are, and I may learn something from you.
Great. I love the distinction you made there with tolerant and
well, I think maybe if I... We're not really thinking too much about them.
Right.
So think about it. If you're tolerant of someone, that means you truly believe that you are better than them in some way or form or shape. So these terms we've developed over time with good intentions, but we have to really examine the terminology that we use.
Right.
We need to understand each other.
Right. Okay. Great. So in working with like other churches or other faiths in Minnesota, have you run into any resistance or anything like that?
Not at all. I find Minnesota and actually many other states to be so willing and actually have a lot of desire to learn about others. I've spoken at synagogues, churches of all denominations. I've spoken at many, many venues. And there is a true sense and a true desire to learn and understand what Islam is. And, you know, obviously the world of Islam is playing a big role in today's politics. So people really want to know. I have not. I'm sure there are some others who have experienced, you know, some adversity out there. But I personally have not experienced that.
Okay. And I know you mentioned earlier that, just to paraphrase, that maybe there's like bad apples in every group or things like that. Do you think that maybe the media has just highlighted that and it's not really... It's so hostile out there between people?
Yeah, you know, I've encountered individuals who actually make it a living to demonize others. I've encountered individuals who make a lot of money on demonizing what Islam to non-Muslims who do not know anything about Islam.
Right.
And I've had discussions with them. I've challenged their convictions. I find them to be non-educated, and they have found basically a line of work to do this. The same kind of people, admittedly, and to be fair, exist in the Muslim world, who make a lot of money and demonizing Christians and Christianity. Those are the people who are dangerous. Media, of course, pick up on these people and give these people time to speak, or, you know, FaceTime or radio time or airtime. Media outlets should not do that. They should, in my opinion, focus on people who truly want to create an understanding with others, an actual understanding, mm-hmm. not to create a false understanding of anything that's out there.
Okay, great. What is the main message that you want people to take away from your lecture tonight?
Actually, if I can cheat and say two messages.
Sure, oh, definitely. But you can add more if you want.
Absolutely. The very first message is... Educate yourself, whether it's about the world of Islam or the faith of Islam or about any other faith. Do not prejudge based on, forgive me, what you're told by the media or what you're told by pundits out there or even your church or mosque or synagogue. Go and learn on your own and find out what the truth is. You will be pleased of what you find. You'll find that the commonality between all humans is much more prevalent than the adversity that we have. That's one thing. And the second thing is that there is a false fear of jihad and sharia making their way into our country. That fear is completely unfounded. Completely unfounded. First, American Muslims contribute a great deal to the goodwill of this community, of the society. Many, many Muslims are your doctor, your scientist, your lawyer, your engineer. They are the ones who have the greatest inventions. Many people do not know that Steve Jobs was a Syrian, Arab Syrian, for instance. Many people, so if you have an iPod or an iPad or an iPhone, if you really have an issue with Muslims, you shouldn't use them. I think many people would disagree with me, right? Educate yourself. But there is no desire by Muslims to wage war on America. I just came from the Middle East, and because of the change that has happened in the world, I've heard from so many people who said, you know, if change happens in the Middle East, we need change. But we don't want bad things to happen to America, because America today is the cradle of the world where all good inventions and good technology and good innovation comes out. So there is a great goodwill towards the U.S. and America. And I, as an American, I'm proud to hear that. And I know that firsthand from people. I travel, on both sides of the pond, as they say, and I talk to people. There's much more goodwill than there is hatred and mistrust. We have to overcome this mistrust that exists.
Okay. And you talk a lot about people becoming educated, you know, and did you have these views before you became an educator, or is that something that kind of came about after you started teaching? Or
I've always had these views of the necessity to understand others.
Okay.
So I went through actually a great conversion when I was 18.
Yeah.
Have I always been educated? No. But I took it upon myself to better myself as a human being. I waged jihad on myself, if you would, to become a better human being. Mm-hmm. Instead of when I first came here, I was very suspicious of people around me. Mm-hmm. I was taught by Hollywood there were a lot of black men walking the streets shooting anybody who disagreed with them. Right. Of course, I found out that it wasn't pleasantly surprised to find out that it wasn't true. So this was, you know, a very small example and a true example of truly what wasn't my thinking. Mm-hmm. Now, over time, I found out that African Americans, European Americans, it doesn't really matter what America. Most Americans are fantastic people. Mm-hmm. If we have 1% of Americans who are criminals, that is not a reflection of the whole society. So take it upon yourself to read. Today we are one nation under Google. Yeah, you know? Yeah. So read about others and read about everybody from their own perspective. So if I wanted to educate myself about Christianity from a Muslim perspective only, actually the Muslim perspective of Christianity is fairly positive. But from certain elements in the Muslim world, their perspective of Christianity, I would be hostile towards Christians and Christianity. Right. But I didn't take that path because it's an unfair path. Therefore, what I would tell everybody, educate yourself about Islam from Muslim sources so that you really know exactly how Muslims think and what Islam truly teach. I'm not asking anybody to convert to the faith of Islam, unless, of course, they want to. This is a free country. But I'm asking everybody to become educated about others, not only Muslims. Educate yourselves about Jews. Jews have gone through a great amount of oppression in the Christian world. And that oppression was driven largely by ignorance. How many times as humans and as members of humanity, how many times are we going to do this? Where we oppress others because we're ignorant about them and we're happy with our ignorance. I, for one, I will not be happy with my ignorance. I will go to a church, and I've gone to many, many churches. I'll go to a synagogue, and I've done that. I'll go to a mosque, and of course I do that as a Muslim. And I tell the people, do the same thing. Go to a mosque. See what they have there. Right. See how people worship, how the simplicity of a mosque that is required by the faith. What people talk to each other about and everything. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Okay, kind of go to the source then.
That's exactly right.
Okay, great. Well, I'm looking forward to the lecture, and it was a pleasure meeting you.
Very nice to meet you.
Very nice. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks again to Sheikh Oda Mahawish for joining us on today's Culture Click.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.